February 14th, 2018. It's the Watt for Pedro Show.
Thank you.
Watch for Pedro show. Happy Valentine, everybody. I'm very lucky. Brother Matt is indisposed. He's got a new teaching schedule, so I'm in Pedro. I'm not totally man alone, though, because of the wonder of Scott, those engineers of Estonia. I got a special guest with me, Eric Grievous, bass man that got hooked up with me, Stevie Bono, and we got to hear his tune, Parallax, right after John Coltrane's Venus there. And welcome aboard, Eric.
Good to be here, Mike.
Yeah. Let's start at the beginning, your beginning of your music journey. Can you remember your earliest memories of music?
Oh, wow.
Like when you were a kid at home or something? You
know? Yeah, you know, I remember being very inept. Man, I must have been like two or three. My mom was staying at home.
Yeah.
We were living in L.A., and she was managing this apartment building, so she was at home with me. And right around the corner from where we lived, there was a record store, one of those old record stores. Yeah. And, I mean, I remember a lot. We would go over there. It seemed like quite often, man, and, you know, and buy 45s.
Yeah.
And well, she would be like, you know, buying this. And so it was everything that was happening then. But, you know, that whole experience of going to a record store, especially like, you know, in South Central L.A., you know, it's like the smell of the incense. You walk in and it's like fucking velvet posters. I remember all of this, you know. And but it was around that time that, I started, I think, really, really developing an interest in it. So she would always let me buy, you know, the Jackson 5 was huge. Yeah. So that was my thing. So, you know, going home and, you know, play it again. So I think that is my first, you know, salient memory of being around music and stuff. And at that point, my parents played music. All of, you know, we had one of those big, what do they call them, man? Funny side note, my parents won this shit on the Newlywed Game. They were on the Newlywed Game.
I remember that show.
Yeah, yeah. So it was one of the, so the furniture growing up for the first, I guess, few years of my life were from there, and they had those big consoles where it was like a turntable on one side, and then on the other side was a radio that, you know, kind of like you push down from the different stations, and then in the middle it had a big compartment where you keep all the records and stuff.
Oh, huge. I remember those.
Piece of furniture, you know.
Sure. Yeah, and you opened up the top or something. I think it's called stereo or something.
the speakers, I don't even know what they just sounded like, but and so, you know, it would be just like, it would either be like a stack of 45s on there. They had the thing, you know, once one was done, another one dropped down, or albums and stuff. And I remember being around that quite a bit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Mike Jackson, the Jackson 5, I think James Jamerson was doing a lot of that bass.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it was funny because when I first started playing, you know, started on electric bass. And going back and revisiting those records, and I was like, man, fucking Jermaine Jackson is the best bass player in the world. I thought it was him, you know. And it's like, and it was Jamerson on, you know, like deep cuts on the record on a, what was it? I Want You Back is Wilson Felder. But at that point, it was like, you know, I was like, man, this cat is, he's incredible.
So, dance too.
Yeah, man. But ironically, so, yeah. You know, over the past like 10 years, I've gone back and seen some of the, they had a thing that came out. It was like the Jackson 5 Live at the Forum in 1970 and 1972.
Wow.
And Jermaine is fucking killing it.
Oh,
I mean, beast live. He was playing, man. Live, and I researched as much as I could, like, you know, were these like the pseudo live records where, you know, they go in and redo stuff, and there's no sign of that anywhere, you know.
Yeah, they did that to Live at Leeds, I heard.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah, they did, man, all of them, you know. There were very few pure live records that, you know, even the, like the iconic ones, you know, Franklin Comes Alive, I heard they went back in for that, you know, was it Gratitude, the Earth, Wind, and Fire record? That shit is like P-Funk, Earth Tour, all that shit is.
I bet you the Mahavishnu, that Eternity, I bet you that's them playing.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, that's a whole different beast right there. We're talking about mortal men here.
I think Rick Laird was on the bass. Yeah. In your apartment there, in your pad, was there instruments or were your folks just listeners?
No, they were just listeners.
Yeah. Okay. So, can you remember the first 45 you bought yourself?
With my money, shit. Yeah, it was a birthday gift. I got some money. I don't remember. It may have been. It was a Marvin Gaye tune. You know, everybody knew that I was interested in music. So, yeah. Or just you know, like big record listener. So I got my own little turntable, and yeah. They gave me some money. And by this time, we moved up to Fresno. So I went around and I took the money, and I remember. So I got the What Is Here album by Tower Power.
Great.
I got a Ray Charles compilation, and the only reason I got it was because it was a lot of records. It was like three record set, one of those RCA things. It was like $2, so you know I was like, wait a minute, I get three records for this, and yeah, my mother was like, oh yeah, no, you should.
I think
really
they called those loss leaders. It was just to like turn people on.
Right. So yeah, I remember the What Is It, and I think it was a Marvin. It may have been like the Marvin Gaye. Shit, man, I don't remember. I remember it was a Motown 45, and then I got the two albums.
Okay, what about at school? Did you take any classes at the grade school or junior high?
Junior high. Well, by the time I got into junior high, I had finally got. Well, yeah, it was about 13, 14. I got. I had begged my parents for a bass for a while. They started me on guitar. And I played guitar like woefully for about a year or two, and I was always attracted just to the low end, you know.
Why is that, Eric?
You know, I don't know. Something about the sonority. I always tell the story. I remember when this was like in the late 70s. There was the band called Taste of Honey.
Sure.
Boogie Woogie thing, and so we had that record. And, you know, the two of them are on the cover, you know, these, like, gorgeous women. And it was just, like, something about the bass was like, wow. And so taking the guitar lessons, there was a point in time where they would have kind of, like, bass exercises on the four strings. I always took to that. That was always shit.
Okay.
Everything else, like the whole Tom Dooley thing and you know, cramping my fingers to make chords and stuff, it just didn't happen. So I quit that. And, you know, but I was still very, very much interested in bass. I was like, can I get a bass? So it took a while for me to get one. But, so going into junior high, I said, you know, I just got this bass and went to the band director, and he said, well, you know, if you're playing that, then you need to check out some low brass. We obviously don't have a electric bass or even a double bass there. So let's start you.
Oh,
on,
you're talking about like the marching band.
Yeah, yeah. So it was kind of like a.
Start on saxophone.
No. It became that because I started on baritone horn.
Okay.
Which is kind of like the mini tuba.
Sure. Yeah, you play it on your chest.
Yeah, yeah. So that's what I started on. So that was like my first foray into like you know.
Bass clef.
Yeah.
Okay, and what I heard what was good about them, the Bones, too, their bass club, for marching band was the big mouthpieces. Because when you're marching, man, those, like I heard the French horn was the worst, the tiny little mouthpiece was tough.
Yeah. I could never get a sound out of a trumpet or a French horn. You know, it's like I just naturally don't have that armature thing, but my mouth is built somewhere. So
look, I got this tune you sent me called February 13th. Was it about yesterday?
It was dedicated to my mom.
Okay.
My mom was born on February 13th.
Okay, let's play it for her right now.
Oh, must maintain my sense of humor, my sense of irony, my sense of the absurd. Life is not a tragedy. Far from it. If one looks at life from the correct perspective, if one sees it the right way, well then, life is funny. You have to be able to laugh to find something comic, diverting, engaging, even delightful. Because there's a silver lining in every cloud. There's a bright side to every dark side. For every pauper, there's a prince. For every illness, there's remission. There's always something auspicious about something malignant. It's the way you look at life. If life deals you a lemon, then make an enema out of it. For even in suffering, there is wisdom, good in bad, redemption in all things. It's in your attitude. After all, if you're going to go down with a ship, why not love the water that will drown you? Embrace destiny. Don't turn your back on it. Be like Sisyphus. Welcome your fate. Don't struggle against it. Because by welcoming it, you transcend it. You master it. You own it. It becomes yours. And it ceases to be your enemy. And by taking it in and allowing it within you, you become a being of light, a saint, an angel, a bodhisattva.
Trust our own wisdom, get ourselves on track. change these fine existing realities. So let's all you models make the current ones obsolete. We'll never change things, fight existing realities. Let's build new models, make the current ones obsolete, yeah.
ישבנו במסעדה בכפר תוש והיה לנו טוב. בעל המקום סיפר איך הכפר נשרף בשנה שעברה ואיך כולם עזרו אחד לשני וברכו לוואדי. אחר כך הם התפללו לפרוואטי וביקשו סליחה. זה היה סיפור טוב, חבל שאינני זוכר את כולו. אני כן זוכר איך בבקרים הגברים יצאו לבנות את ביתם ואנשים פיזרו אור והיו בהיריון. בן אדם יכול למות ככה לרוב ראשון.
For Pedro Show. Yeah, you just heard Eric's son Boto on a tune called Boto from the Eric Rivas Trio. Before that was Farther South. We sat at a restaurant, Panther Paw, out of Brighton, with historically, before that, Super Freak out of Milano. Wednesday, hey, it is Wednesday, huh? Joe Frank with Flying. Before that, we just lost him last month. Incredible poet, Spieler cat. Alex Zhang Huntai with an incredible version of The Stooges' No Fun. I think he's in SoCal right now. Erotic Billion and his Heretics with Valentine's Day Massacre. They're out of Zagreb. Vasco and Anasalki with So Arkhangel Ke Te Vatsam. Sorry, my Macedonia is pretty lame, but he's out of Skopje. Grupo Turisti, a Belgrade band with Yanisei. Thank you, Stanislav Ceslav Zabic, out in Cleveland for that. And to start it all off for his ma, Eric Rivas, February 13. Happy birthday. So, what about the other thing that some guys who play do? Like, get into bands with their buddies for after school in the garage or stuff like that. Did that happen up in the Fresno?
Oh, yeah. We, so I think everybody that was in that, it wasn't really a marching band, you know, but it's, you know, junior high orchestra. But by the time we got to, I think, 9th or 10th grade, yeah, some of us started playing. You know, I was playing bass. A friend of mine was playing keyboards, drummer, and saxophone player. I mean, he could do both. Wow. And yeah, we started a band. It was kind of a shit. I don't know, man. Like a really it's like you're trying to play fusion type
okay,
stuff.
Okay, yeah. Was it 70s?
Yeah, we're talking about late 70s, early 80s.
Okay, so we're talking maybe Return to Forever or.
Oh man, shit. We're in middle school. There was no way. I mean, you know, just you know, I mean, I could play the bass line to like School Days or something.
Oh,
like that.
He's Stanley Clark. Yeah, okay. Yeah. That was a big record, huh? I try to tell people that. Same with Billy Cobham Spectrum. I mean, fusion was kind of a big thing.
Yeah.
I think Billy even got a gold record, the first drummer to get one. Let me understand. Were you learning bass by, of course there was some school instruction with those tunes, but were you like kind of listening to records too and listening to the licks like Stanley Clark there?
Oh yeah, totally.
Okay.
Yeah.
Were you writing yet?
No.
Yeah, because I try to tell people this, the 70s mentality, you did not really write, you just tried to copy records.
Yeah, that was it.
Yeah. That was it. So did this band you were in have a name?
What was it called? Vantage.
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 Okay. And did you guys do gigs?
Nah. I mean, you know, school stuff.
Yeah. That's another thing I try to tell people. You did bands. All you did was practice.
Yeah.
Hey, what do you think about that, Eric, this word rehearsal versus practice with music people? I can understand with actors.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of similar to, you know, people, like how boxing is different than any other sport. Okay. You know, it's like people don't play boxing.
No.
You play other things. You know, when you box, the shit is hardcore. Okay. And I think that you know, when you get into the mentality of
getting together. What I'm trying to say is you don't really rehearse boxing. You train, right?
Right. And I mean, I think that there are people that do have kind of a rehearsal mentality when it comes to it, but I mean you should be hitting all the time,
I don't think of a basketball player. Hey, I'm going to go to the court and rehearse some hoops. No,
right.
You really actually shoot, right? You throw the ball up there.
Yeah.
Rehearse means like almost in front of a mirror, just making moves.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's just a semantic thing. Now, what did Vantage evolve into? Did it ever turn into anything?
No, okay. Man. I think that I'm probably the only one that stayed, you know, with the music thing. Everybody else was like.
And when did you leave the electric bass for stand-up?
Well, my family was up in Fresno. We relocated to L.A. for a year. I went to my junior in high school. I went to L.A. High.
Oh.
And then circumstances led me to live with, moved to San Antonio, Texas.
Whoa.
with my my grandparents. So I ended up graduating high school in San Antonio, and by that time, you know, there were jazz bands and that whole Texas tradition of high school jazz bands. I mean, they're serious, you know.
Oh, yeah. Like drum corps New York City.
No, it was serious. And it should, I mean, I played electric bass in the marching band.
Whoa. So, how did you do that? Carry your amp?
They had like this Ampeg on a cart, and it was hooked up to a car battery.
Okay.
So I had like two underclassmen. You know, they would push behind me.
Yeah, okay.
The thing about it was like it was a marching band in the tradition of like all the swag bands, like all the great, you know, HBCU bands.
Sure.
So Ford, A&M, TCU. So it was all this like dancing and shit, you know, like the pushing 90s with your knees, like all this. And, you know, invariably.
No, I remember manual arts, you know, because San Pedro High was in the Marine League, so we played a lot of inner city.
Oh, yeah.
And I saw the routines. They were beautiful. And the pitching ass drum routines. Oh, my God.
Yeah. It was something, man. So, you know, what happened was, you know, because you'd have these freshmen who were, you know, basically, you know, the scrubs of the band.
Yeah.
But they're getting to march in these parades. So they're happy as shit, dancing all over the place, running into me, man. I got, like, all kinds of, you know, like, you know, it's like, they would not stay distance. You know, the cord was, what, like 12 feet, and I would try to stay in front of them, and, they, you know, they're out there dancing and shit. Amp is everywhere, you know. But that was fun.
Okay. But being in San Antonio... And with this jazz, that's where you moved to the stand-up.
Yeah, so right after I, when I was getting ready to graduate, I was looking at going to schools, and there was
what, the minors? Are they called the minors there?
The minors.
Yeah, the University of Texas El Paso.
Oh, yeah, I think so. Yeah, the UT El Paso.
Yeah, I think they're called the minors.
Okay.
Just a little factoid. Right, but anyway, you were going to go to school there?
No, I was just looking to school, and there were some guys that had gone off to Southern University.
Oh, okay.
And so they would come back and do like clinics and stuff like that, and they said, man, if you're interested in this music, you know, you should think about coming to Southern.
Yeah.
So that summer, my band director from high school, he was like, man, there's a upright bass in there, man. Why don't you just take it? Just take it. So I took it.
Like a donate. And,
yeah, he gave it to Mr. McKinney. He gave me one.
Mr. McKinney.
But I went off to Southern, and I was still, man. I was really, really, you know, electric was my thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's like it took a while. So to fast forward. The bass sat in the corner, man. You know, I put clothes and shit on it. You know, it was just like, it looked cool. But I ended up moving. So I went to school at Southern, moved back to San Antonio. My son was born around that time. So then I was gigging around. I got a gig in the Holiday Inn.
Yeah.
So doing that six nights a week at Ripples on the Riverwalk in, you know, in fucking San Antonio. So, There was a guy who was a big, big jazz head. His name was Victor Paredes, great guitarist and piano player. And he was really instrumental, and he would, man, check this out. And he would just bring all these records, man, you know, Kind of Blue, or that Shape of Jazz to Come.
Yeah.
The Brotsman Last Exit stuff.
Yeah.
It was a really, really great mix of stuff. It wasn't, quote unquote traditional. It was, but it was also like just a grand scope of things. And he was always giving this to me, man, you know, and he was encouraging me like, man, you know, just check it out. What do you think of that? We get into these discussions.
Yeah.
So eventually he was like, man, you know, you should try like transcribing some of this stuff, you know, cause I was starting to really feel it.
Yeah.
And so still playing electric. I was, you know, starting to transcribe like trumpet solos and, you know, like Miles was pretty, although you can't really get to it when the notes and nuts and bolts of it, but just like note-wise, I was able to play some of the stuff. And all of a sudden, it clicked. It was like, wow, wait a minute. What the fuck is the bass doing here?
I think and it was Paul Chambers, right?
Yeah, Paul Chambers.
Mr. PC, John Coltrane writes a song for him.
Yeah, Yeah, I mean, and it was as if, you know, just a light went on. It was like, oh shit, you know, I'm sitting here doing this. Let me do this. And it was just a really great period of time for me, like mentally to be open to that. And it is just, you know, the light turned on.
Yeah, so yeah. When, it was an epiphany moment.
Yeah, it's a total epiphany moment. So, you know, I went and took all the fucking clothes, the dirty clothes that had been accumulating on the base. And
clothes rack.
Tuned it up and you know, just started from there. So I was actually pretty much a late bloomer when it came to dealing with the double bass.
That's okay. I think Vincent, you know, that Dutch painter, he only did his last 10 years.
Wow.
You know
wow.
what I mean? Yeah. Orson Welles said, well, I think he got paid for lame-ass wine commercial, but he said, no wine before it's time.
It's time. I remember that.
Remember that?
I remember that.
Two-buck Chuck with the screw-on cap stuff. But
what was the name of that wine?
I think it was the Masson Brothers. Paul Masson.
Paul Masson.
Or something, maybe. Paul Masson, something like that. It wasn't high-endy. And we're at the end of the first hour, February 14th, 2018, edition of Watt Pepito Show. Special guest, Ed Reeves. Hold tight for hour two. February 14th, 2018. It's the second hour of the Watt Pepito Show.
Oh my god. I totally see those, like...
Are we recording?
Next in line was a boy of 7, marked by deep wounds made by a steel wire with which he'd been bound, while French soldiers mistreated and killed his parents and his sisters. A lieutenant had forcefully kept the boy's eyes open so that he would see and remember this for a long time. This child was carried by his grandfather for 5 days and 5 nights before reaching the camp.
There's only one thing I want, to be able to cut a French soldier up into small pieces, tiny pieces.
There's only one thing to be able to cut up into small pieces, tiny pieces.
Watch for Pedro Show, start off the second hour with Is It Is, Eric Rivas. What can you tell us about that song, Eric?
So the first tune off my first record as a leader. And kind of brought in a bunch of friends. And with that particular tune, I actually, it doesn't sound like it, but it's derivative of a Chris Whitley guitar part from, that first, the trio record with Dougie Bound, Den of Ecstasy.
I'm on there.
Yeah?
One song. You knew Chris. You know Dougie.
No, I mean, I was just a huge fan.
Okay. They had me come up. They did that thing in a fucking theater in Ventura. They had me drive up from Pedro. I can't remember the name of the tune, but I'm on one of those tunes on that album.
Oh, man. That's incredible.
I love Chris, man. Really bad luck. The cancer got him young. He was a beautiful singer and guitar player.
Oh man, he's like the gift that keeps giving, man. You know, it's just
so
like,
inspired as it is. All right, bitch.
Right.
Okay, then we heard Sun Ra doing "Drop Me Off in Harlem," off you know, Nuclear War. God, that song is pretty relevant now. Alberto Boccardi and Stefano Pollia with "De Europe Part 1." Those are some Italian guys. Inspired by Bastet, kind of a Egyptian cat-headed god, I guess, goddess of the dream world. That's what I'm told. Faye from Houston with Tagadias, or Frog Hair, same town, driving my baby away. I'm from Ohio, my Turanian home, from X, Line X, Cleveland guys, I think. Or Akron, I always get mixed up. Everyone is dirty from the city with Dilaudid, and finally, Small pieces, tiny pieces from Tarby. And that's another project of yours. Eric, what's about that?
It's myself, Orrin Evans, and Nasheed Waits.
Okay.
We've known each other, you know, from New York over 20 years now. And we just started a band. We were kind of sick of how the scene was going. You know, I mean, I don't know, man. Maybe it's guys get older and certain sensibilities come in. And for lack of a better term, it was just kind of like, you know, tepid. It's like bleed for the shit, you know.
Yeah, I understand. People are, they're not playing for keys.
Yeah. It's Betty Carter said that shit. She was like, you know, you take every note like your life depends on.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it's like, and you know why? Because it fucking does.
That's right.
and to find like-minded individuals in, you know, my brothers, Nasheed and Oren, and we all feel that same way. So we've had this band now for a while.
Yeah. You know, John Coltrane, in this interview I got of him, he said, you know, I think real musicians are after some kind of truth.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
Let's go back to the story. You're taking the clothes off the stand-up. You're going to work it.
I'm gonna do it, man. So it's like there were no real there were people who played double bass in and around San Antonio, but they were more, and that, not to disparage these guys, but they were more of kind of like the Eddie Gomez, you know, that sound. And I'm listening to all this shit with, you know, like I'm starting to get into Jimmy Blanton, yeah. Will Beware, Paul Chambers. You know, I wanted that sound. So With lack of a teacher, man, I would just go out and buy pictures of cats, you know, like, where's the right hand placement? Where's the left hand? How are they doing?
Wow, from pictures.
Yeah, yeah. This is what I'm, you know, for me, it sounded like their action was like 3 feet off the fingerboard, and you know, it's like, well, wait a minute, it can't be that, you know?
Well, I heard that's Jameson's electric Fender. Because does come from the stand-up world.
He comes from it, yeah. I mean, the thing that surprises me so much about this shit, man, is like the one finger thing.
Right.
It's like, you know, and he wasn't bubbling. He was playing all notes as true notes, so it was like all down, you know.
Right.
And
I think he rested his thumb on the pickup cover.
Right. I mean, I don't know, the facility he got with that is pretty amazing, man. You know, he's a big... Actually, Jameson is one of my hugest influences on double bass, because all of the shit that he does, man, if you transcribe it or even through the book of his, man, all of that shit lines up perfectly for the double bass.
Oh, yeah? Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. I tried some double bass in the late 90s, and, man, it just killed my hand. I think if you get too used to that sideways thing, it's hard to do the up and down.
It's incredible, and the thing about it is like
whole different, you know, set of muscles.
It's a whole different instrument. You know, I mean, the double bass comes from violin.
Sure.
The electric is a guitar, and man, yeah. When you switch back, it's like the electric is a long fucking instrument. You know, with double bass, it's like, okay, you have it here, you're up low,
right.
And at a certain point, you hit the shoulders of it, and right. you know, it's like a kinetic thing. So it's just like right there, and then as you go up, it's all kind of compartmentalized. With electric, man, it's just like a vast horizon of notes, you know. Like, shit.
Where do you take it from? Just watching pictures. Do you get involved with musicians?
Yeah. So that hotel gig,
yeah,
it actually transferred to another hotel gig, which was actually a jazz gig. It was a jazz trio gig. And so I did that for a while. And at that point, I had met Delphio Marsalis. He had come into town with his band.
I saw him play with Max Roach.
Oh, yeah.
Bone, right?
Yeah. He came in, and I was doing something with the Carver Cultural Center down there. So I volunteered to pick him up. I was driving around and stuff. And I was like, man, you know, I'm really getting into it. And he's like, well, you know, if you're really interested in it, my dad has this program down in New Orleans at the University of New Orleans. You should come down and check it out.
Whoa.
So at that point, I mean, I had been vacillating between schools, in and out, you know, and I was like, well, fuck it. I'll apply. And I got in and went down there, and that's where it really started. So I actually went back to school, and I was in New Orleans and living down there. That really, you know, it hit the fast track at that point.
There's a good bass guitar guy there, George Porter.
Oh, man, some meters, funky meters.
Yeah, pretty well. Look, we're going to play Sing Me Some Cry. Any thoughts?
No, enjoy.
Thank you. On the radio dial, I'm driving home with a big old grin, 'cause I can't spell you up. Secrets, outdoor secrets, peculiar smells. Wasn't that an amazing funeral? No one tells their outdoor secrets.
secrets, outdoor secrets, peculiar smell. Dead secrets, outdoor secrets, peculiar smell.
One, two, three, they say they see the state of me. We'll be right back.
Watch for Pedro Show, Sing Me Some Cry from Eric Rivas. Smart Cities, Dumb People, MB Jones. I think he's in Pusan now. A truck from DMF out of Orange County here. Stick Sellers, upstate New York with Food Chain. Jonas Williams from Australia with This Is My End, The Revolution of Hell Yeah. Cop's Dream from up in the city. Circus Devils, that's yet another project. Dayton, Ohio with Mr. Pollard, Peculiar Smells. Andrea Roten with Elegy. And I'm spacing, but somewhere in Europe. I think it's an Italian guy who lives in the Czech Republic. The Emperors of Ice Cream out of Brighton with Picture Pout, 1518, that's Italy. Talking to our ghosts. And finally, Vadim, Eric Rivas Trio. Is that how you pronounce Vadim?
Yeah, Vadim.
Okay. What about that tune?
That was actually the first time that myself, Chris Davis, and Andrew Cyril had played together.
Your trio?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I think that was the first thing that we had done.
So after school, or you're doing bands during school probably too?
Oh yeah, I mean that was the main thing. I mean the school thing was really cool. Ellis was an incredible teacher. I think that I had signed up. I was in a couple bands at the school. I had a private lesson with bass instructor that I forget his name, and I had some private lessons with Ellis. And I mean, I think that we played music all of about 15 minutes for the entire, you know, year I was there. It was just talking, you know, and he was an incredible teacher. You know, their whole philosophy, because it was Ellis, it was Harold Batiste, the famous producer, New Orleans, you know, worked with Tucson, all those cats. They were all there, and their whole thing was, you know, they didn't give you information readily. It was kind of the antithesis of what you think school is. Unlike, you know, if you go to conservatories now, like Berkeley or something like that, where they just force feed you all this shit.
Oh, yeah.
They didn't give you anything. I mean, they made sure that you knew. Now, if you became very, very specific as to something, then you got answers. But they were really into like, hey, man, you got to figure this shit out. This isn't about like me, you know, giving you this. So it was.
Probably wanted to find your own voice, find your own way.
And it was definitely that. And so between that and then I started working around New Orleans, you know, I mean, and that actually took that I was doing that more than I was at school, man, because, you know, you play on the street, you play in coffee shops, you have this gig, you go uptown and do this gig. At that point, I started playing with Dr. Michael White, who was, you know, like traditional New Orleans music.
Right.
So and it also helped me develop my sound because, you know, doing all that, and you didn't have time to carry an amp around and worry about that shit. Sometimes, you know, playing on the street, what the fuck are you going to plug into? So it really, really helped.
Work the room or work the street, work the corner.
Work the street, you know, like you have to be there in 15-minute band. You show up with your axe and you start playing.
Yeah.
I think that's
a great way to get educated.
Yeah, yeah. Oh man, it was great, and there were so many, and everybody was the community so loving and just like, hey man, you know, you need to check this out, you need to do this, you need to do this. So it was that combined with just the level of pain that I had to deal with, because that was real playing at that point, you know. So, you know, bleeding on the strings, hands opening up, cramps, all that, man, all kinds of shit, you know.
Like camping in tents.
It was. I would get gigs, man, and just start popping aspirin.
Oh,
it's like, oh yeah, I can do that. It's like, you know, let me do four Advil right there, because my hands literally, my middle finger on my right hand opened up from like the first digit to the tip.
Ooh.
Ooh. So, you know, and it was. I mean, you know, I'm playing, and man, you get to that pain threshold where it's just. You know, it's like, okay. Then all of a sudden, so my eyes are closed, I'm, you know, whatever, and I'm like, why are my hands sticking to the strings? You know, it's just blood everywhere. It was great drama, you know. It definitely had a certain
attribute.
Yeah, a certain effect to it, you know.
People, we're at the end of the second hour, February 14th, 2018, the Dish Watt Peter Show special guest, Eric Revan. Hold tight for hour three. February 14th, 2018. It's the third hour. The Watt for Pedro Show.
I
for Pedro show started off the third hour with Edgar. Tell us about that, Eric.
That was with the first quartet features Nasheed Waits, Jason Moran, and Ken Vandermark. It was inspired by several Edgars. Edgar Meyer, Edgar Degas.
It's kind of I get it.
It's like rather than, you know, picking one, I just
picked them all.
His name, yeah.
Okay, great. Then we had Hyperborea Section 4 from David Gerard, Andy Gerard out of Massachusetts. This click out of the Croatian guy living in Switzerland. Yeah, Nandan. Kinez live in Maldivisa, Forget That Eye, España. Mute Point Bottled. And then PT 44. Eric Reeves, what's this about PT 44?
A few years ago, I was stuck on a train. I went out with did this trio tour. So yeah. It was my birthday, and the guy that we were going out with, he really hadn't been on the road too much. His road chops, you know, and I thought maybe his like overall touring chops were a little suspect, but then come to find out, you know, he really hadn't done anything. So we're in Poland, we're traipsing around Poland, and before then, you know, we had told him, like, look, man, make sure that you get first class tickets for the train. You know, it's like Poland, it could be tricky, you know, it's not that much more, blah, blah, blah. So, of course, you know, Ted didn't listen to us. So we're in, like, third class. It was a 13-hour trip. No AC. And nobody had changed over to Zlotys. Okay. So, man, just hungry as fuck, hot as shit. I mean, this is like, you know, the middle of the end of May in Poland. And so the tracks, there was a the rhythm of the train was this thing in five.
Oh.
And so after a while, you know, after like 3 hours, like, shit, let me just get stuck in my head. Let me just, you know, so pulled out some paper and wrote out the rhythm and stuff, and the tune developed from there.
Oh, man. Okay, what happened after New Orleans, after all your education, both in the school and on the street?
I ran out of money.
Okay.
Ran out of money, and so it's like, shit, what am I going to do? I was playing down there with Peter Martin, the great pianist from St. Louis. He was living down there. And he said, man, you should try to get into this Betty Carter Jazz Ahead program. She does this program every year. And if you get in, you go up to New York and, you know, do that. By this time, a lot of the cats the guys that were down there, like Brian Blade and all those cats, they had migrated to New York.
Yeah.
So I sent Betty a tape of some stuff I'd done at Snug Harbor with Peter. And was just waiting to get into that. So I was like, fuck it, you know, they had a big house up in New York. And so I drove up and just kind of, you know, dove into the big water, as it were. And then I got the Betty Carter Jazz Ahead thing. And coincidentally, she was going through a bass change at that point, and she called me for the gig.
Whoa.
Yeah, it was, I was totally ill prepared, but I got it, and it was a great sorry about that. It was a great learning experience. You know, it's like Betty was a incredible teacher. Hardcore. She didn't give a fuck about your feelings. Or you know, I mean, she cared, but you know, the idea of tough love, I mean, compared to what, you know, she tells you, you got in the bed, she said, you know, when you leave here, you'll be a better musician, you may be a better person, and yeah, so that's
gotta know about Betty.
Man,
look at the City of Asylum. What's this tune?
City of Asylum is based on we had done a series of the great Oliver Lake has been affiliated with this organization in Pittsburgh, called City of Asylum, and they basically they've set up, they have an alleyway, and they bought all these houses, and it is a kind of a refuge for exiled writers from around the world. Writers have been persecuted, sure. And their thing, and they can come there and write and live there. And
oh, that's bitching.
It gradually, they have a whole, it's starting to be like a whole block. And you know, artisans come in, they've done one of Oliver's paintings is plastered on this, like, you know, three-story brownstone. Yeah. They have this Bangladeshi poet, it's like one of his famous poems in Sanskrit. They had they've carved it out and placed it on the house. It's a beautiful place, beautiful vibe, beautiful everything. So, and I think that what they're doing is just really, really important, with especially, you know, how the world is today.
Oh, yeah, so, absolutely.
The thought police in full effect everywhere, so. Yeah.
dancing close. The band is playing Stardust. Balloons and paper streamers, they're floating down on us. She said, you got 1 minute left to fall in love. In solemn moments such as this, I have put all my trust and all my faith to see. And all my faith to see. And all my faith to see. Don't make your body.
So I was down at the rodeo, place I would never frequent. There I saw her. She was buzzed on beer and cocaine. I took her home. And now my life is all changed. Her name was Sundown, and she was beautiful.
Pedro Show, last music for this edition. Yeah, beautiful. City of Sound, Eric Reeves Trio, The No Ice with Memories, The Gears, Another Problem That Won't Go Away, DER with Sundown, and finally, Tar Baby again with Sailing On. Sailing On, that's a great, great tune.
Yeah.
A great sentiment, right?
They were Yeah, well, the Bad Brains has been, you know, I mean, I brought that one in.
Yeah, Daryl Jennifer.
That's cool.
Actually, Adam Yap told me he's learned bass watching Daryl do that. Dr. No told me, actually, because Bad Brains actually started as a fusion band, he told me, and he was the bass man.
Oh, really?
Then Daryl comes in. Yeah. That's what he told me.
I saw something on them with it, you know, and they were like, you know, big Mahavishnu cats.
Yeah. You know, music is music. It goes through all these trips.
Exactly.
What plans you got now, Eric?
Hanging for a while. I'm locally doing some stuff, playing with this great saxophonist this weekend, Steve Lehman. He's teaching out at CalArts now. And then starting a band with Jeff Parker.
Wow, the guitar man.
Yeah, Guillermo Brown and Joshua White. And so that's on we're starting that up. And let's see, traveling wise, I'm doing a dual tour of Japan with Chris Davis starting next month, latter part of next month.
Whoa, you might get some Sakura. You know, with the cherry blossom.
Yeah.
You might be in the time, and that's a big dealio over there. Or in D.C., if you go around the tide pools, they gave us a bunch of trees, like 8,000 or something. And sometimes it's needed to catch it there, especially when they're really big, right? They're ready to fall.
Well,
look, it's been quite a journey. Oh, what about recording-wise?
Recording, I got a grant from the Rockefeller Foundation and I composed some music for a quintet that I'm looking at trying to record that as soon as possible. Probably sometime in the latter part of the summer. We performed it last month, December, so a couple months ago. And, that's the next thing going.
Well, what about for the listeners out there, they want to find out about you, where they can find internet stuff?
There's ericrevis.com.
Spell that out. E-R-I-C.
E-R-E-V-I-S.
R-E-V-I-S. That's one word, .com.
.com. Okay. Soon to be updated and renovated, so don't think that I'm lax. If you go to it and you see that, like, damn, this shit is from... it's coming, you know. But and also on Facebook, Eric Rivas on Facebook.
Okay. Here's something I ask a lot of people. You know, if younger person or maybe an older person, but they want to get in this racket. What do you have any advice?
I remember the first time I went to Paris, and I got to hang out with the Art Ensemble.
Whoa.
And Lester Boy goes,
Lester Boy,
this is great. And he goes, man, oh yeah, you're playing. Oh, this is good. You know, it's never too late to quit. It's like, it is hard. It is like, so that kind of came to mind.
Was he wearing a doctor coat?
Man, exactly. And then right from there, I'm talking to Roscoe Mitchell, and he's like,
oh, yeah.
I always remember that, you know, you were fired when you were hired.
So, that's right.
Just keep on the path. So I don't know why those came to mind, but no, you know, it's a long journey. And if you commit to doing this, you're doing it for a higher thing. You know, providing some beauty and good in this plane is worth everything. And you know, to know that you always have something to do and to be dedicated to what you're doing, regardless of whatever. You know, I think the one thing that I try to tell younger cats is that the one thing that art will provide you is the opportunity for you to establish what success is. Don't ever let anybody tell you what the fuck success is supposed to mean. You're the arbiter of what you want to do. And you know, hold yourself to task and you become successful along those lines. You know, society will tell you some other shit. You know, it's almost like the shit is set up against us. You know, the fact that we can wake up when we want to wake up or do what we want to do. You know, it's like, how dare them? Fuck them. But you know, it's a bigger, it's a higher cause, and just, you know, bleed for it.
That's beautiful. I dig it much, and I really am grateful for you being on the show. Thank you so much.
Man, thank you so much for having me, man. Yeah, I'm a huge fan of yours, and man, from all the songs that you've been announcing, man, I can't wait to check it out, man. It's like, it's a beautiful mix of stuff. I'm like, I'm sitting here taking notes like, who's that? Oh, shit. You know, so man, thank you. It's really been an honor to.
All right, back. And when you get your new stuff recorded, I want to play it. Let's talk about it.
I would love to, man.
Okay. Thanks so much. All right. Keep on keeping on. People, it's been the February 14th, 2018 edition of the Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.